Hello, and welcome to the Purlieu Podcast, a podcast where we chat with influencer marketing professionals, social media influencers, bloggers, YouTubers, podcasters, you name it, about what has led to their success. I'm your host, Alexis Trammell, and today we have the pleasure of hearing from a true thought leader in the influencer marketing world, Jenny Heinrich. Jenny serves on the board of directors for the Influencer Marketing Association. She is Ketchum's Senior Vice President of Influencer Marketing, and she has taught influencer marketing at the University of Chicago, Northwestern and DePaul Universities, Columbia College, and Central Michigan University. Her specialty is in developing meaningful and sustainable relationships and strategic marketing programs that engage, excite, and inspire consumers. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jenny.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm thrilled to be speaking with you.
How about you tell us about yourself and how and why you got into this influencer marketing game?
Sure. It's kind of crazy to say, but I've been in the influencer marketing world since the mid-2000s. It's really, you know, it's funny when I speak with clients and colleagues and everyone thinks that influencer marketing is this new hot thing that's really just come about in the past few years. But in actuality, influencers have been around for a really long time. Think back to your traditional Tupperware party back in the 60s and 70s. If you think about it, those were influencers. They were influential moms and wives who hosted parties for their friends and invited them all to experience the wonder of Tupperware. And the goal there was to get them excited and get them buying Tupperware products as well. So influencer marketing is not new. I've been working with brands, big companies, products, putting products in the hands of influential consumers since really about the mid-2000s, in an effort to develop positive word of mouth, positive experiences, and to so that consumers love the products and end up buying them. So influencer marketing has been a part of my world for over a dozen years now, really.
Wow, that's amazing. So how did you first get into it?
The first foray in my career into influencer marketing was in and around 2006, when I was working in Toronto for a word of mouth marketing company called Matchstick. They were one of the founding members of WOMA, the Word of Mouth Marketing Association, and they did pretty much exactly what I just explained. They found thought leaders, influential people in social circles, and they had a wide array of clients everywhere from food clients to shampoos to, you know, beverage and alcohol, whether it was beer or soda. And they found influencers, they gave them product, they gave them enough to try themselves and to gift some to their friends, and they developed content. That was right at the beginning of what I like to call the social revolution and evolution, where blogs were becoming a place where people who had opinions started a blog and they started writing about the things that they love and the things that they hated. And it gave them an outlet and a forum in order to do so. And those influential mommy bloggers, as they were called in the mid-2000s, went on to socials. So at the time, it was really Facebook, because nothing else existed back then. Soon after, Twitter came around, but back then it was really just Facebook and MySpace. And they would go onto their social channels and talk about the products that they loved and experienced and the ones they didn't love so much. So that was really my first foray. It's funny to think back then, you know, finding influencers, because there weren't any tools back then that really helped identify and vet influencers. We did it on the street. We had surveys and we would camp out at retailers and different events, experiences, at the beach if it was, you know, the kind of place where we thought that our target influencers would hang out. And we took them through surveys in order to establish their influence and gauge their interest in joining our programs. So that was, you know, in 2005, 2006, like I mentioned. And then really, I've been working with influencers ever since.
Wow, that is so incredible. What hard work that must have been for you all.
It was hard. I think the hardest part about it, which is kind of funny and frustrating at the same time, is how we measure their influence. Back then, Facebook didn't have the sophisticated analytics that they do now. Neither did blogs. We were really looking at unique monthly visitors and, page views to see how many people actually visited their site. But any of that deep analytics, the preference, the sharing of the content, the tracking, actually hearing about a product in order, did they go into the store? Did they buy it? Did they like it? Did they share about it? Did, the exponential reach that content has now and that we're able to measure just wasn't possible back then. So not only was it challenging finding influencers, but it was also challenging measuring the impact of the programming that we were creating for brands and big brands, not, tiny companies. This is the P&Gs and the Coca-Cola and Nike and McDonald's and all of those, very recognizable and global brands. They were amongst the first to really start into influencer marketing, and it was still, very challenging to actually measure the impact back then.
Yeah, I bet. So what about what you do now? What do you love about it?
I love so much about it. Where do I even start? So first, I love the relationships that are formed. I was at a conference yesterday, and one of the speakers asked the audience of hundreds and hundreds of people if they are doing now what they thought they do when they were a teenager, when they were going into college. And it was a quite mature audience. And I was one of maybe five people that raised their hand and said, I actually am doing exactly what I always wanted to do.
Wow.
And I always knew I wanted to be in advertising, marketing communications, strategy, engaging consumers, developing relationships with people that can make a difference in some which way. And of course, there's levels of difference that people make or the different products and clients that I've worked with. But I think the best thing about influencer marketing are the relationships. I am actually legitimately friends with a lot of the influencers that I've worked with, that I've partnered with. I saw them and I met them when they were tiny and they were just starting out, and I've seen them absolutely blow up to the point of having their own shows on the Food Network or, their jewelry line being shown at Barney's, New York. Just huge, from 50,000 followers on Facebook to, 6 million. I love the relationships I've formed. I really consider so many of them friends. And then also, I know it sounds funny, they're agents. I've developed great relationships with people that are managing the influencers because we've partnered really strategically on so many different programs. They know exactly what I want, the expectations, the right influencers who would make my program stand out and really deliver impactful content to the clients they work with. So I've made friends with them. And then clients. When you do something and you put together a strategy and you present it to them and you see it from the initial thought bubble to, the measurement, the fruition of everything coming to be, and it makes the clients look amazing to their bosses. It makes their products engage with the consumers in the right way and drive sales. All those different relationships are so meaningful, and I just love all of them.
That sounds wonderful. So what does developing meaningful and sustainable relationships mean to you? How do you go about fostering relationships with influencers?
I think it's just about being a real human. I once wrote a list of, how to actually communicate with an influencer. And really, they're you and I. They're people who have interest and who know a lot about certain topics. They develop content in order to, you know, deliver information to their audience. They love certain products and experiences. They dislike others. So whenever I reach out to an influencer and speak to them, I'm truly myself. I don't put on marketing speak or my senior vice president voice. I talk to them as though it's a friend of mine and we're having a coffee. I tell them, you know, exactly who I'm working with, what the ask is, what I'm hoping to achieve. I'm really honest. I'm down to earth. And I really feel like that's a great approach. You know, I try not to play the game as much as humanly possible. Of course, negotiation on compensation is always a bit of a, you know, back and forth. But really, you know, if I'm honest, if I'm straightforward, if I truly understand them, their brand, the products that I see them having affinity for through the content that they're producing, whether it's paid for or organic content that they're just creating because they love it. I try to make sure that whatever opportunities I'm bringing to those influencers and to my clients fit, and that it's not, you know, force-fitted, that it can be natural and seamless. And I think that those are the programs that I've created with influencers that have been the most impactful and that have worked the best. So that's really my approach. From a consumer side, I always try to make it relatable and resonant with the audience, because you have to. If it sticks out like a sore thumb and if it doesn't make at all sense with what the consumer has going on in their life, then the program, the content isn't going to work. It's going to tank, and you know, it's going to have a negative impact on the program and budget because it's basically a wasted partnership. So on all sides, I just try to be really, really transparent, and I try to understand everyone's motivation, what everyone wants to get out of the program, whether it's the influencer, the agent, the client, the consumer, what they need, and having that, you know, perspective of sitting in everyone's seats around the table and putting together the best program to have the greatest results for everyone.
That is a beautiful concept. I love that. And it's very on brand and valued strongly by Perlu as well. So that's great to hear. So I'm curious, what value do you see in working with micro or even nano influencers?
Sure. So I think of influencer marketing, and I teach this in my classes, as a pyramid. At the very top of the pyramid, you've got your celebrities and your top tier influencers. When you're putting together a program, you only need very few of them. Their reach is massive. They're very expensive, so you can't usually partner with more than just a few of them, or sometimes even just one. And as you work your way down the pyramid, with the pyramid obviously being bigger at the bottom, that's where you start to find the scale. You find your power middle influencers, your advocates, your fans. The people at the very bottom are just me and you, who love, you know, different products, different brands, different categories, and we constantly talk about it in our social spaces and offline with our friends and family. What I find is that middle to bottom of the pyramid, they have higher engagement. You're going to see higher engagement with their content than the top. And it's a math game, really. If you've got millions and millions and millions of followers at the very top, engagement is typically quite low just because of scale, because there's so many people that you have the opportunity of reaching. Whereas the bottom, they're, you know, especially at the very bottom with your nano and your micro influencers, their reach is not as strong as your celebrities and your top tier influencers, which is typically why in a program, you need more of them to make up that reach, and you can afford more of them because they're less expensive than the top. But what we find often is that their engagement is really strong. They have a relationship with a great majority of their audience. They respond to comments. They, you know, go back and forth. They answer questions in their social feed. They're more niche in terms of the topics that they talk about. So they have that relevance and that influence, true influence, within whatever category it might be, from automotive to beauty to food. So typically, you know, I like to put together a hybrid approach where you've got a bit of each of the different levels of influence, but the value of the micro and the nano influencers is that they're affordable. They're willing to flex and, you know, work with the brands in order to develop that, you know, really great content and showcase the brand in a way that, you know, is very kind of brand facing, package facing, so that you have brands and clients that work with them definitely have that visibility. And their engagement is really high. Their audience, you know, trusts their recommendations and know that, you know, if they're partnering with them, it's because they really believe in whatever product or brand it is, and they're willing to engage and go back and forth with their consumers to have that dialogue, which is really important and oftentimes missing with the really, really top influencers and the celebrities.
So with the nano and micro influencers, I'm curious as to what a typical relationship would look like with them when there may be so many in the program.
It's a great question. And I think it really ebbs and flows. I don't think there's a typical, you know, relationship that's consistent across the board. You know, I like to say that I have relationships with all the influencers that I partner with nano and micro, depending on how much content they're creating. If it's, you know, a one-off, which I typically don't recommend, versus having more of a long-term approach, where they're going to be posting, you know, throughout a season or throughout several months or even a calendar year. You'll develop, you know, different relationships. One-offs, you don't really have that chance to, you know, really get to know them and, you know, have that ongoing dialogue with them. But when you're working with influencers through the winter months or through the summer season or even through, you know, the year, you've got that constant drumbeat of conversation going back and forth with them. And you get to know them. You get to know their kids, what they're doing. You know, if they're going away on vacation for a week and they're not going to be available, or maybe they are. And, you know, when you're developing that longer term program, you actually, you know, what I like to do is say to an influencer, what do you have going on? Where would this product, shampoo as an example, where would the shampoo fit in with things that you already have going on, so you can seamlessly weave it into the content, into the narrative that you're already going to be creating, so that it's really, really organic and it doesn't look, you know, force fit into a specific situation. So you get to know influencers in different ways depending really on what you want to do with them.
That sounds wonderful. That's great. So out of all of those collaborations that you've managed, what have been some of your favorite or most creative or most impactful influencer marketing campaigns?
It's a good question. I love some of the programs with, you know, the highly recognizable brands. You know, we did a program a couple years ago for Kellogg's Frosted Flakes, where we brought back Tony the Tiger. We worked with Jim Henson Creations, a la The Muppets and Sesame Street, and we redid Tony the Tiger. That was a really fun program. We partnered with Justin Flom, who is an illusionist, a magician, and Tony and Justin created amazing illusions and you know, digital content showcasing Frosted Flakes. So that was a really, really fun program. Another one that is very different but extremely impactful was for the Alzheimer's Association, where we wanted to create a groundswell of support for one of their annual initiatives called The Longest Day, where there was just a sweep across social of everyone wearing purple using the hashtag #EndALZ and really driving that awareness about The Longest Day, because with Alzheimer's, you go in circles and circles because you're, you know, it's a kind of constant repetition of bringing back, you know, thoughts and memories, and those that suffer with the disease and the caretakers that take care of those with the disease, it's a challenge. So we did a program where we partnered with hundreds of influencers of all different levels who had some connection to Alzheimer's, whether it was someone they knew who suffered from it, whether it was someone they knew who was taking care of someone they knew who suffered from it. And we created really meaningful content. It was true storytelling. It was long form on blog. It was photographs on Instagram and on Facebook in order to really galvanize the support around hashtag #EndALZ and the Longest Day initiative that they had. So that was a really meaningful program. So it really varies, you know, it's everywhere from cereal to a new medication that just launched to an association like the Alzheimer's Association or the American, you know, Heart Association, all different kinds. And some are fun, some really drive to, you know, the heart. So I've loved working on a variety of different programs with clients. I love them all. I've also disliked some, but that's, you know, it's neither here nor there. It's, you know, there's tons of products out there and influencers, you know, they're a great way of driving that reliable third party, credible recommendation. So there's always a place for influencers in an overall communication strategy.
For sure. Wow. Yeah. That the Alzheimer's program really hits home. That's a beautiful campaign. So how do you decide which influencers you would like to work with long-term?
Well, I am seasoned in this field, which is another way of saying I'm pretty old. So I know a lot of influencers and I just know, you know, I know the space. So when I'm presented with an idea, you know, that initial kind of thought bubble of we want to do this, you know, what are we going to do? Some influencers just naturally come to mind because I've worked with them in the past or I follow them, seen other work that they've done. I have a sense of who their audience, you know, is and the type of content, the aesthetic of their content, their look, feel, tone, voice. So, you know, some influencers just come to mind immediately. Nowadays, unlike when I first started, in influencer marketing, like I said, in, you know, 2005, 2006, where we were on the street interviewing people. And that was, you know, our sophisticated way of finding influencers. Nowadays, we've got so many tools at our disposal that pulls in all the information that helps us make really educated, strategic recommendations to our clients as we're discovering different influencers. It pulls in the API of Facebook, of Instagram, YouTube, and it tells us, you know, who are these influencers? What's the demographic of their audience? Who are they? What's their age? Where do they live? How many kids do they have? What brands have they partnered with? What's their engagement rate overall? When they talk about this type of content, does their engagement go up? How many fake followers do they have? How many engaged followers, active followers do they have within their, you know, following? What channels are they strongest on? What influencers follow them and, you know, engage with them so that, you know, we can start to establish that exponential reach that might be possible. All those different filters, if you will, we can activate as we're looking at different influencers so that exactly the right people rise to the top. And then, you know, once we've got that short list, we dig in even further. We vet influencers to the nth degree based on keywords, opinions, thoughts, perspectives on certain topics, you know, in the food category. How do they feel about GMOs? How do they feel about sugar? You know, back in the day, it was palm tree oil, you know, all the different things that might be characteristics that we either want or don't want our influencers to represent. We really, really vet our influencers. And then when we have that final list, we start conversations, you know, real life conversations in person, if possible, or on the phone. And we talk with them and we, you know, find out their interest in the program, if what we have in mind, you know, what's their riff on it? How would they make this their own? And, you know, does this excite them? Do they think their audience would get excited by it? Does it fit? And then we go from there until we have, you know, the influencers that we want to partner with.
Great. I love that. I love that you guys make sure that it's always the right fit. So what are some of your biggest pain points when trying to find the right influencer for a brand? Are there any red flags you've identified that you tend to avoid?
Well, before the tools that we, you know, if you work at a company like Edelman, where I was before, or Ketchum, or, you know, the Weber Shandwick, all the big agencies now have these tools. Before, engagement rate wasn't available. You could determine what their following was, but you could do that without a tool. You just see how many people actually follow the specific influencers on the channel in question. But now metrics have got even more sophisticated. So you can actually see, okay, someone might have 1 million followers, but how many of those followers are active? How many actually engage with the content that's posted? So engagement rate is a new metric that has become increasingly important, so that you can start to drill down, not to potential reach. Influence, you really want to know what their engagement is, who is engaging with the content, what are they doing when they engage and posting on their feed. So engagement rate, you know, is extremely important. So I'm happy that that's now there. I encourage everyone not to look at reach as the only metric when deciding upon which influencers to partner with, because it doesn't tell you the true story. And now, you know, with the influx of fake followers and bots, a lot of tools are now able to weed those out. Many tools out there actually give you a percentage of real followers within the influencer's reach, which is extremely helpful. Before, you really had no way of knowing, you know, how many of those 1 million followers were just fake accounts that weren't going to have any impact at all. So those are some, you know, sticking points. And then, you know, from a client side, working with your agency, working with your influencer network, with your agency who's running your programming, to allow all the influencer marketing programs to be tracked through your sales system. You know, really partnering with that department and, you know, your marketers, your communications, your PR, whoever's running your influencer programming, so you can create that correlation between the programs that we're doing from an influencer side and actually how it's impacting sales. Because that makes the entire program stronger. It allows you to actually look at the impact of what, you know, the money that they're spending on influencer marketing, how it's actually affecting sales. And to really drill down, so that the next time we do a program, we can take the learnings and the best practices from one program and apply them together, so that we're constantly iterating our strategy in order to drive the best results.
So one more question for you. Do you have any advice you'd like to share with brands who are trying to break into influencer marketing?
I do. My biggest piece of advice is to A, have the courage to do it. You know, it's never too late to start. A lot of big clients are nervous to do their first program and, you know, it's a spend, but you're never going to find out if it works unless you try it. And the second piece of advice is, for your first time, don't try to do it by yourself. There are lots of rules and regs out there. The FTC, you know, they're a beast. They will crack down if things aren't disclosed in the right way. If you just try to do it on your own, you might overpay for an influencer because you might not have the tools in order to really drill down into their engagement rate, the brands they've worked with in the past, how their content actually performs. Where a lot of agencies or influencer networks, they have the tools in order to, you know, really tell you the worth of the influencer and the content and the partnership that you're going to be paying for. And the relationships, you know, it's going to take a client so much more time to put together a program themselves than it would be to partner with your agency counterpart or network who does this every single day. It's kind of one of those things where it's like, contact the expert. You know, I'm not going to try and fix a leak in my house because I wouldn't even know where to start it. And I will probably definitely screw it up. So, you know, I call in an expert to help me to make it happen quick, efficiently, and with
you know, to stop the leaks and the best possible, you know, result from whatever it is. So that would be my, you know, advice for clients trying to get started. Number one, definitely do it. And number two is for your first foray, call an expert to help guide you through the process for your first time.
Great. That's some great advice. So thank you so much for all of this great insight that you've shared with us today. And thank you again so much for speaking with us.
You're so welcome. It was my pleasure.
And thank you to everyone for listening to the Purlieu podcast. If you like our show and are interested in what it takes to succeed in influencer marketing, check out our blog at blog.purlieu.com for more podcasts and blog posts. And sign up for Purlieu at purlieu.com to meet, mingle, connect, collaborate, and grow your career. Don't forget to join us next month for our next installation of the Purlieu podcast.